Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes if you have enjoyed listening to this podcast so far. And check out switchpivotorquit.com for even more personal and professional development resources. But for now, just sit back, open your mind, and enjoy the show. On today's show, we're chatting with Dr. Rachel Allen, a licensed clinical psychologist with over a decade of experience supporting people to take inspired action. She helps people connect to self-discovery, healing, meaningful behavioral change, and living life passionately and authentically. Influenced by Western science and Eastern philosophy, she takes a holistic approach to her patients' care and overall treatment interventions. Now, her warm and down-to-earth style creates an inviting space to explore honest and hard truths to facilitate wellness, learn how to be with suffering, and step outside of self-destructive patterns and connect to true joy. Dr. Allen practices in the San Francisco Bay Area, as well as offers live video sessions and phone calls and text-based treatment. Get ready for this really insightful conversation with Dr. Allen. Hello, Dr. Rachel. Thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ayana. I'm honestly incredibly thrilled to be here and to get to talk to you. So thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm excited for this conversation. So I want to get us started with having you tell us a bit about your expertise and your background.
Sure. Okay. So, well, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. And I've been working in the field for a long time now, probably about a little over a decade. And I focus mostly now on different aspects of health and wellness, but I work a lot with women related to women empowerment and building healthy, satisfying relationships, improving communication, and just sort of how to build a baseline self-care, self-love, self-compassion practice. Mm-hmm. I work a lot with mindfulness and sort of spiritual aspects of health. And and so support people in that way. And I've been over the course of my career, I it's been pretty linear for me actually. Mm-hmm. I always sort of was interested in psychology and was able to pursue it in a wholehearted, direct way. So I feel very fortunate for that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mental health awareness has been at the forefront of many conversations more recently. Why do you think that people shy away from speaking with a therapist?
Ooh, yeah, that's a really, really good question. I think that's a really important question. I think there's probably a lot of different things that contribute to someone's hesitancy to maybe, chat with a therapist or seek out support in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's still a lot of stigma related to mental health issues, but I think even just this idea of needing help, I think people attach ideas to what that means and that it's still sort of taboo, or it can be, I think, in certain cultures, especially, mm-hmm. It can be looked at as maybe like someone really crazy or someone's off their rocker or weak, So I think there's unfortunate sort of associations people sometimes still have related to what it means. Mm-hmm. And I think also maybe, you know, even if it's not that that explicit, I think people aren't totally sure what therapy really is.
Mm. Okay, so let's dive into that for a second. So what is therapy for those who may be entertaining the idea of working with a therapist, but they're not quite sure what they would be walking into? Maybe let's give them a glimpse at what that actually looks like.
Yeah, okay, great. Basically, I mean, I feel like therapy should be is a safe place for someone to go to look at themselves and the things that they experience in a compassionate, critical way with someone else who's able to guide them through it.
Sure.
And so I think it's really just a place you go for yourself where you can be honest and raw and stripped down and slowed down. And, you know, I think it's just a space to be safe with someone else to talk about yourself.
Right.
Okay. In a real way.
Right. Where you don't have to hold anything back because you're afraid of judgment or anything like that.
Right. Okay.
So when someone signs up for sessions, what's sort of like the average of what they would sign up for, let's say for a time frame per session, and maybe a duration where you feel like, okay, you'll get some type of results or maybe make some headway after X amount of sessions?
Right. Yeah. So like structurally, what does it look like? It depends. I do both brief and longer term work with people.
Okay.
And I think, I help support people in meaningful ways. I'd say even within 6 sessions, you know, right. I think that there can be change that can be made.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes after the first session, people leave feeling a renewed sense of hope.
Mm.
And I think progress, you know, is something that does take time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that you need years upon years upon years necessarily to experience significant change or shifts.
Okay.
And I'd say the standard session, my sessions are 45 minutes. Usually it's like a 50-minute hour. That's pretty standard too.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the length of time.
Okay.
But I think it depends often.
Okay. So what does it look like when, because I think that one thing that I picked up from what you were saying is, you know, the openness that happens when you're participating in a session. And I want to just find out from you, what does it look like when we're sort of hiding from ourselves, and maybe what we can do to get on the other side of that? Obviously therapy is one way, but you know, for people who it may not be within their means to get therapy right now,
right.
Or maybe it's not, it's just not something that they are comfortable with right now. What does it look like to sort of like help ourselves get on the other side of that? And like, I don't know, what does that really look like?
Yeah.
Feel like it happens a lot.
Yeah, sure. And I think that's important what you're saying, which is that, you know, not everybody may be able to afford traditional therapy or be ready for it but still may want to, you know, look at things or may need help.
Right.
So that's it. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think, you know, anytime anyone is sort of feeling stuck in their life, you know, in a job, in a relationship, in a friendship, in an experience, you know, that's probably an indication that they could benefit from some support. And so whether it's through an actual therapist who they're going to see for a session, or it's through teletherapy, which is, you know, a different type of support, it's often more affordable than you know, or it's going to a trusted family member or friend. I mean, I think what you asked, sort of, what does it look like to not hide from yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really about being able to confront whatever it is that's keeping you in this stuck place that isn't satisfying to you, as opposed to pretending it's not happening, or, you know, saying it's something that it's not, or avoiding it or denying it. You know, it'd be really sort of with compassion, I'd say, and curiosity, confronting whatever it is that needs to be looked at to budge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately what I'm saying there is that it's about saying what's real for us.
Mm.
And if that's to a therapist, wonderful. If it's to yourself, even better. Like that, you know, that has to happen. If it's to a close, trusted friend, you know, but that's what it all boils down to. You know, to not hide from yourself means to say what's real.
Right.
And I think we all know that for ourselves on a very deep level, but it can be scary to confront.
Right, right. Absolutely. What are some of the key steps to maybe better communicating your needs for those who are used to maybe shying away from doing so personally or professionally?
Yeah. Saying what we need. So I think it is hard for a lot of people. I think for women, especially in the workforce, it's hard to sort of, I think we've been conditioned to be more passive or deferential and to not feel confident in asserting ourselves. So I have this really cool, easy to remember acronym, I think it's easy to remember, but it's called HARD. And so it stands for honest, appropriate, respectful, and direct. And so if we have a need, the way that we can assert that to someone else is by being honest in what it is, appropriate in sort of asking for it to be met, respectful. We're not going to just demand it. We're not going to, you know, yell it across the room. But we're going to be direct about what it is. And that's going to help people know how to meet us in it. So, and I think, by the way, assertive communication and being able to say what we need in effective ways is totally a skill that requires practice, because it's not always easy.
Right. That's true.
That
makes total sense. And I love that acronym. And I think that that is something that all of us listening should try. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because sometimes it's difficult to know where to start when you're trying to say, hey, this is how I feel. And communication, I think a lot of us in more recent years have realized that it's a space that we're lacking in. Some people think they're a good communicator until it's time to communicate, and they realize, like, oh gosh, like, maybe I'm not so good at this, you know, the words won't come out, or I can't find the exact words that I want to use. So that makes perfect sense. I like that, definitely. Do you have any, because a lot of people listening are in situations where they're looking to switch, pivot, or quit. And some of it deals with, or let's say some of the root of it could be difficult colleagues or management, things of that nature. Because as we know, bad managers is one of the largest reasons why people leave companies, or why they become unhappy at companies or in their professional life. Do you have any tools that maybe someone could use to help them effectively deal with a difficult colleague or a difficult manager? Something that they can control, you know, things that you can do, because a lot of things that we are engaged with, we can't control how other people act, but we can control how we act. So are there any things that you might want to share with our listeners about maybe some things that they could do or be mindful of when dealing with difficult colleagues or management?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, first I want to just acknowledge how challenging it is to, especially if the difficult person is a person who's in a position of power over you. I mean, you know, that's incredibly stressful. So I just want to acknowledge that this is difficult to navigate. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I do think there are things that, you know, I can encourage people to look at, to try. You know, one is that there may be some real concrete problem solving that needs to take place. I mean, it depends, I guess, on the extent of how difficult this person is and in what way, but there may be the need to advocate for yourself around the relationship or the treatment here, or what your needs are, like what we were just talking about. I mean, you might use the HARD acronym when it comes to this person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and maybe there are more boundaries that you can put in place that, and so what that might be is, you know, not sacrificing yourself more than you need to, or not spending more time with this person than you need to, or really having limits around what you do with and for this person, if that's possible within, you know, sort of the role.
Right.
I think another thing I think can be hard but important and potentially powerful is sort of addressing the tension, or, you know, being able to share your experience of the relationship, because it's possible this person isn't aware of how you're experiencing them or might benefit from hearing about the impact they're having on you. And so, again, I think that does loop back around to sort of saying what's real for you in a respectful, appropriate way. And I think taking care of yourself is important always, obviously, but when it comes to this type of stressful work situation, you know, it's important that you're having fun outside of work and that you feel well supported in your life and, right, you know, that there are other things you have going for you that you can use to sort of decompress. And then lastly, I'll just say, I just heard this morning, I was listening to a podcast and a Nelson Mandela quote was referenced, and it was something along the lines of, try to see the good in others. They often act better because of it. Mm. And so I think it's also this idea that, you know, if we were to assume this difficult person isn't being difficult just to make our lives awful, you know, but they probably have their own stress or their own challenges that they are struggling to work through, I think that can help us maybe feel a little bit more compassionate and maybe not personalize it as much.
Right.
And I think that can help us sort of stay more regulated when we're having to interact with them.
Right, right, right. You know what? I was watching this show and there was a person that was having some challenges and the therapist was working with them. And it was funny because at one point everything was being done to them. So everything that was being described that was happening was being done to them. Do you ever encounter those situations? And if so, how do you sort of walk the person back out of that? I don't even know if that's the right wording, but how do you begin to realize that, hey, maybe everything's not happening to you? Because I think that sometimes that can be a block for people when their mindset is such that everything's happening to them, like almost like everyone's out to get them and the world hates them and everything's just like not going right. Have you ever encountered that? And is there anything that you potentially like do to maybe help somebody get on the other side of that type of thinking?
Right. Right. Yeah. I see that a lot. It's sort of like, it sounds like you're describing sort of this sense of victimhood that people sometimes get caught up in. Yeah. And it can be sort of self-perpetuating. It's like the only lens that sometimes people experience themselves from. And so then everything they see and do, you know, is skewed. One of the main things I help people do is to find ways to empower themselves. And you sort of alluded to this earlier. You said this explicitly, actually, you know, we don't have control. We have control over only so much. And so, you know, I think I do help people focus more on how they can find out what that is for them and feel empowered to do what is going to help them feel their best. And so part of how I help people do that is to really look at the stories they tell themselves and the thoughts they have that oftentimes we don't examine critically. Mm-hmm. And just sort of, it's this idea that, you know, just because you think it doesn't mean it's true, or don't believe everything you think. And so I do work often with people at deconstructing their thoughts and really starting to weigh the evidence of what's real. Mm. And the more people do that, the more they're able to get a little bit of distance from these unhelpful stories that they tell themselves and really understand why they're compelled to. Mm. And that helps flip the script.
Right, right. That makes sense. How important is, in your opinion, is self-discovery in one's journey to reach greater goals or achievements in life? Because a lot of people that listen to this podcast, as well as other podcasts for their own personal enrichment, they're on a journey to be the best that they can be. And they want to achieve some greatness. They have some goals that they're looking to achieve. So how important is self-discovery in that journey?
Yeah. Wow. That's such a, I love this question because of the way you're sort of combining really understanding and discovering, you know, yourself and how I think they're not mutually exclusive. I think they go hand in hand. I think without really discovering who we are, we can't really know what we're capable of, or we might still be limiting ourselves by stories that say we can't achieve what we most want to, or what our dreams, you know, tell us we can. Mm-hmm. So I think the more we really discover and discover who we are, the more we're able to achieve what we're capable of. I just think that one can't occur without the other, probably. Mm. And I think, because I think the other part of that is the more we discover who we are, the more we become most authentically who we are. We accept that, we're wholehearted in that. And I think that opens doors for us along the lines of exactly what we want to be doing and what we're, and how we can have the biggest impact. Mm. Yeah. So I think the self-discovery is almost like a prerequisite for achievement.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I like looking at it like that for sure. Yeah, yeah. So if someone's listening and thinking, okay, so I need to do a little bit more self-discovery, where would you suggest that they start?
I mean, I have to say, I do not think that self-discovery is something that happens alone. Mm-hmm. I think there needs to be guidance. And so whether it's staying connected to, you know, communities that you feel safe and understood in, like your audience who comes here to get support from you, or, you know, people on social media who you feel safe and connected to, who inspire mm-hmm. you, or whether it's really touching base often about what most matters to you with a family member or a friend or a therapist, I think it can't occur in and of yourself, you know, that you have to be willing to share with other people what you're experiencing and what you're wondering and what you need and what mm-hmm. you're thinking and, mm-hmm. and get feedback and, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense, because I think a lot of people, that's the worry too, is the getting the feedback. Well, if I solicit feedback from someone and they say something that I don't want them to say, how am I then going to feel? Or can I handle it? You know, I think that's a big thing, because no one wants to hear maybe the not so pleasant things that they need to hear in order to improve, though.
Right.
People want to run.
Yeah, I think. That's a really, really important point, that it can be really scary to expose yourself and open yourself up to feedback or even criticism. I think that's why it has to be done with someone who you've established safety with, mm-hmm. who you know is never going to say anything, you know, to deter you, or who, you know, who is your biggest cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And any feedback they have is only going to be in the service of supporting what you've said you want and need. So that, and that can be hard to find, you know, mm-hmm. for some people, that trusted other. But I want to challenge people to think about who that is for them. And if there are people out there who don't have that, you can have that. And I encourage you to put yourself out there to find it.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have a program in the works called the Program of Courage. And you mentioned, you mentioned on your website that when we confront our challenges and stay open to growth, we arise with greater strength, flexibility, and a better understanding of what true joy and self-love is. Can you talk to us a bit more about that?
Sure. So basically what I'm saying there is that the more willing we are to look at the things that we do in our lives that maybe aren't the best for us or that we struggle with, and maybe we know, you know, maybe we know exactly what it is that we keep doing that gets in the way. Maybe we don't know, but we're aware that to some extent, there's something not quite working in the way we want. The more willing we are to really boldly and bravely examine that, understand that, make sense of that, nurture that even, and that's a courageous act. Mm-hmm. You know, that's real vulnerability. That's real introspection. Mm-hmm. But it's the exact thing that we need to expand beyond those limitations and to achieve and to sort of like get out of our own way.
Right.
And so the second we're able to really get honest with ourselves and be courageous in that way, it really unfolds a path that gives us the chance to be free of these limitations and these ways that we keep ourselves stuck. And then we're limitless and we can do and experience whatever it is we most need and want.
Mm-hmm.
But it's challenging, right? To look at that stuff. So that's why it's courageous, but it's so powerful to start somewhere and be open to where it can lead us in our lives, which often is beyond what we ever thought we could have or could achieve.
Right. Yes. So switching gears a little bit, I want to talk a bit more about self-care and the practice of self-care. Would you mind sharing with us either some things that maybe you personally do for self-care or just maybe some things that maybe people don't know about self-care or haven't thought about and how they can incorporate it into their lives?
Yeah, I love self-care. I'm a big proponent of self-care for myself and for everybody else who, I mean, I really think it's sort of just an implicit part of what is required to be a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And to function optimally, which I know we all want.
Right.
So for me, some sort of unwavering components of self-care involve being with my dog, and walking him and pretty diligently and consistently every day and on the weekends going on hikes and sort of, exploring a little bit more with him. And being with nature is really important for me. It's a really powerful way to take care of myself. Mm. I'm really committed to my health in terms of my diet, and I really make sure to eat as many whole, clean, unprocessed foods as possible. Mm. I'm committed to going to the gym. There's nothing quite like lifting weights, and so that just feels good to me.
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything, I think what self-care is also is just time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just giving yourself space every single day to do whatever it is that energizes you, nurtures you, relaxes you, and making that a priority.
Right.
So I think it can look a million different ways depending on who it is and what you need. But it's more than anything, it's about committing to practicing it every single day and trusting that you're worth it and that it's, you know, sort of a vital part of functioning.
Yeah. This has been a great conversation. I definitely appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and just give us a little bit more of the breakdown on what this looks like and how we could potentially help ourselves from a therapy aspect and outside of therapy, just on our own. Now, if someone's thinking about now, they're like, hey, maybe I should really look for a therapist in my area. How would you suggest they go about finding a therapist that is potentially a good fit for them?
Right. And Ayana, thank you so much. I've appreciated this talk too. Your questions are so thought provoking and I'm grateful for the time here with you today. I think a good old fashioned Google search is always a good place to start. Mm-hmm. Psychology Today is a good resource, but yeah, I encourage people to, call a bunch of different, you know, therapists, you know, mm-hmm. leave several messages, get a feel, you know, get a feel for the person. Do you like their picture? Do you like their bio? You know, is what they're saying connecting to you? Talk to them on the phone. Do you like their voice? Do you like the way they sound? Do they make you feel safe and understood? Mm-hmm. And then give it a go. I mean, it's sort of, sometimes you have to try a few before you find the right fit. It's sort of like dating or, you know, I have a wonderful therapist who I've been working with fortunately for a couple of years. And prior to meeting him, it took me a little, like I met with a therapist here or there, and it just, you get the sense when it's not quite right. And then you get the sense when you're like, wow, this person really gets me. Mm-hmm. So just, I would say, give yourself the time to find that person.
Mm-hmm. And do you think, you just made me think of something when you say, wow, this person really gets me. Do you think that that is a part of a healthy therapist-client relationship when the therapist can really maybe understand, and I'm not saying agree, but understand where the person is coming from and maybe who they are and how they show up in the world?
Without a doubt. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. Without a doubt, it's required.
Okay.
You have to feel like you are really known for who you are and all that that means.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So before we go, make sure to let everyone know where they can find you, where they can find out more about you, especially if they're interested in working with you, and where they can find you on social media, maybe just follow you and get in touch and see what goodies you have to offer.
Awesome. Okay. So I have a website you can check me out. It's www.DrRachelAlan.com. So it's DrRachelLAlan.com. And you can sign up for my newsletter there. I have sort of weekly Mindful Monday tips. I also have a free downloadable ebook on mindful dating. People can get if they sign up there. And then on Instagram, which is probably where I'm most active, I'm Dr. Rachel. And my handle is Dr. Rachel L. Allen. But I think if you just type Dr. Rachel, you can find me there.
Awesome.
And then on Facebook, I'm also Dr. Rachel.
Awesome. 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 Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. And like I said, I definitely appreciate your time and just giving us more insight into this world. And you know, it's so funny. I just have to mention this before we go. For everyone listening, Dr. Rachel, she found me on Instagram and she did something that was a little bit different. She actually sent me videos and I was like so impressed. I was like, wow, because a lot of people pitch you to be on the show or to have a conversation and things, but that just felt so connected. And it wasn't like she was all like dolled up and in her Sunday's best. She was just normal, regular looking and very approachable. It felt very approachable. And it felt very authentic. And I was like, wow, I love this. So kudos to you for doing that. I love that practice and just the way that you sort of put yourself out there. And it was very, a very genuine way of doing it. So I loved it. And I just wanted to share that with everybody.
thank you, Ayanna. Thank you. That's awesome to hear. And yeah, you know, I took the risk and you responded so kindly. And I'm glad you felt like it was, you know, an authentic reaching out. And I'm so grateful to have connected with you. You're doing incredible things. And I have a lot of admiration for what you're doing out there in the world and for yourself. So
thank you.
Keep it up. Yeah.
Thank you
for letting me be a part of it.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And as always, you guys keep killing it.